The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards, in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by the 9th of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. So this morning, the Chancellor Rishi Sunak was questioned on whether or not he would stick to the pledge of the pension's triple lock, which is where state pension is upgraded every year in line with either average earnings or the CPI or by 2.5%, whichever is higher. And Rishi Sunak didn't seem to commit to sticking to that. Here's what he had to say.
Well, on the triple lock is government policy, but I recognise people's concerns about what that might mean, given some of the numbers that are being put around. I would say that those numbers are speculation at this point, and we don't know for sure what will happen. But what I can say is that we will approach these decisions with fairness in mind. Fairness both for pensioners, but also for taxpayers.
Isabel, what did you make of that?
Yeah, so this is the big debate that's been going on in the Conservative Party. I mean, there's been a big debate for a long time about whether the triple lock is actually something that the Conservatives should have committed to in terms of it being a tool financially sustainable or indeed fair on the younger generation of voters who will not benefit from it. But the particular problem at the moment is that the state pension could rise by 8% from next year. And I mean, this would obviously cost the government a huge amount of money. It would also be something that, again, intergenerationally would be quite difficult to justify, particularly if you're removing the £20 a week uplift to universal credit. So people who are in work, who are really struggling to make ends meet, are not getting the support that they say they need, while pensioners are getting this sort of bumper fiesta just thanks to the way in which the state pension increases in line with inflation. So Rishi Sunak was asked about this today, and he, I think, dropped a hint that there could be a suspension to this triple lock. He refused to say whether that would be honoured in the coming year, whether it would be up to the 8% that it's currently bound to rise by.
Now, James, as our colleague Kate Andrews has written about on Coffee House before, there's some huge intergenerational unfairness here, because the only reason that average earnings have risen by so much is because young people have lost their jobs in the pandemic. So what do you think the government should be doing? Because clearly some there don't think that we should be going ahead with the triple lock. On the other hand, it was a manifesto pledge.
It is very hard to see any justification for an 8% increase in the state pension. That would be way above the level of inflation. I mean, I think personally think the triple lock is bad policy full stop, but it would be even out of step with the spirit of a triple lock, which was that essentially the buying power of a state pension wouldn't fall below that of the rest of society. But I think an 8% increase in the state pension at a time when the government is going to have to be making, and that, to use one of politicians' favourite phrases, difficult choices, is well cited the fact that, you know, the £20 increase in universal credit isn't going to continue, would I think be completely unjustifiable and would make Britain look like a kind of gerontocracy.
And one of those difficult choices, Isabel, is the presence of our troops in foreign lands. And obviously we've heard about a cut to the aid budget. And Boris Johnson today announced in the Commons that, yes, we were withdrawing British troops from Afghanistan. What did you make of that?
Yeah, so this isn't really a surprise, given the US have made this commitment as well. It would be strange if US troops pulled out, but UK troops stayed. And this afternoon we had a statement from Boris Johnson in the Commons saying that all British troops assigned to NATO's mission in Afghanistan are now returning home. And he hasn't given a full timetable for the departure, but he then told MPs that most of the personnel had already left. Now, there's a number of questions here. I suppose, firstly, is the question of what is being left behind. I don't think we'll hear anyone saying we're leaving because it's mission accomplished, particularly given the ground that the Taliban seem to have been making recently. There's also the question of leaving a sort of ungoverned space, which is something that I think it was a decade ago now, James and I were writing about David Cameron giving statements in the Commons about the problem with ungoverned spaces such as the Sahel and the way in which terror groups such as Islamic State, such as Al-Qaeda, will fill those vacuums globally with their own terrorist ideology, and they will start to build their own power bases there. So there's a fear that it's a lot of the things that a very long time ago the UK and the US said they would be able to bring to Afghanistan: peace, stability, an end to the way in which terror groups could dominate, an end to women being subjugated. I'm not entirely sure whether there's any particular satisfaction about this withdrawal today.
Mm. James, do you think it's right that British troops are withdrawing? I mean, Boris Johnson in his statement said that because of British troops being and Western troops being there in general, millions of Afghan girls are now in school, and he hopes to preserve these gains. But how would the West preserve these gains if troops are coming out?
Quite simply, it won't be able to. I think it's a very badly kept secret in diplomatic circles that lots of the US's NATO allies think that this pullout is a bad idea. But given that the US is the dominant part of a NATO force in Afghanistan, if it wants all of its troops and forces home by September the 11th, the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the US, then everyone else has to follow suit. But it is hard not to look at what is happening in Afghanistan right now and think we have a disaster coming our way. You already have the Afghan National Army repeatedly fleeing in the face of Taliban attack. The US left Bagram Air Force Base, which was one of their main operating centers in Afghanistan, without alerting the Afghans the Afghan force on the base that they were leaving. The base was then looted within 2 or 3 hours of the US departure. I just think this is the idea that you are going to preserve the progress that has been made in Afghanistan in the absence of Western forces is a very bad idea. The US has also set itself an incredibly limited remit in that it will only conduct airstrikes in Afghanistan if it thinks that it would be hitting a terrorist group that was preparing an attack on the US or another Western target. I think given that, and given the performance of the Afghan National Army so far, it's very hard not to think that Kabul will be falling to the Taliban within the next 18 months or so. And I think that Isabel hit the nail on the head about this point about ungoverned spaces. You know, one thing we know is that terrorist groups are far more dangerous when they have space from which they can operate with impunity. Now, it remains to be seen whether the Taliban will host terrorist groups again or not. But if they do, what is the West going to do about it? And I think this is a real problem. But even if the Taliban do not give house room to terrorist groups again, the return of them to power will still be a disaster for many in Afghanistan. And I mean, most tragically, particularly for women in schools, women who have enjoyed the greater levels of freedom that they have had, not under Taliban control. And most tragically, for all those Afghans who have cooperated and worked with the NATO forces in Afghanistan. Yes, some countries are speeding up visas for translators and the like, but not everyone who has helped the NATO forces is being given asylum outside of a country, and it is hard not to think that they will be put in a very difficult situation by this Western withdrawal.
I think one question that's quite interesting is whether Western forces, whether the US, the UK, are going to reserve the right, the threat, the sort of deterrent threat to return if the situation worsens there, or if training camps return, for instance. That's a strategy that Julian Lewis, who's a Conservative MP, who's got real expertise and interest in defence, has advocated that it needs to retain a sort of limited capacity for airstrikes, for instance, if the situation does worsen, rather than a kind of washing of hands and saying, right, that's us done.
Yes, absolutely. And finally, James, one thing that's on a lot of people's minds today is not Afghanistan or the potential triple lock, but the fact that football is coming home. Did you watch the game last night? And what do you think of the political ramifications of our victory?
I did. I think it's too early to talk about kind of the politics of it. I think one thing is true. If you remember a few weeks back, Kate Andrews wrote a piece about this in the magazine, actually, a very good piece. That there was a row over the fact that the UK had essentially decided to exempt a bunch of UEFA officials and delegates and guests from the quarantine rules. And at the time, the kind of government basically said, look, we did this because if we hadn't done this, the semi-finals and the final would have been moved from Wembley to somewhere else. But there was a lot of political criticism of that because it fitted into this idea of kind of one rule for them, another rule for everybody else narrative. I think you won't hear so much of that criticism now that the final is being played at Wembley and the role that the crowd played in the England's victory yesterday. So, I think it is too early to suggest that there's going to be some kind of feel good factor bounce. I think it's more because, and also it is everything is as always complicated by COVID. And whether the issue of whether celebrations is going to increase the transmission of cases and all that kind of thing. So I would be wary of reading any great political statements into it right now. But I do think the government will not get as much criticism as it ought to get over its willingness to exempt these UEFA guests from the quarantine rules that apply to normal citizens.
Yes, and we hear that pubs may be open later on Sunday nights as well. James and Isabel, thanks very much.